views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Guardian Radio Today is brought to you by the Cleveland Clinic and Printmasters.
I've got the bruises to prove. How could you pretend you never used and abused? Yeah, I answer scorn and refuse to treat me equally. Don't wanna hear your excuse. Pretend you never used and abused. Yeah, I answer scorn and refuse to treat me equally. Don't wanna hear your excuse. Yeah. I've got the bruises to
And welcome to another edition of Guardian Radio Today. Here on 96.9 Guardian Radio, Fresh News, Smart Talk all day. I'm your host, Kahun Ankusara, also known as Dr. Cleveland W. Enius III. It is a Tuesday, fresh off of an Emancipation Day holiday. And that's what we're going to be talking about through the Ojonkwa II, also known as Christopher Davis, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. In the family of islands, toll free 242-300-5720. The Guardian Radio text line is powered by BTC. That's 422-4796. 422-4796. Standard tax rates do apply. We're streaming live on guardiantalkradio.com. And you can also catch up with us on Cable Bahamas 969 or BTC Flow Channel 612. Before I bring my guest into the show, I wanted to read an excerpt from my grandfather's Dr. Cleveland W. Enius Sr., for those who may not know. And he has a book called Let the Church Roll On, which will be back in print this year. Getting that to the printers ideally this week. And so he wrote a excerpt on emancipation, right? Start the show with this, and then we're going to jump to our special guest. But in his book, Let the Church Roll On, my grandfather, Cleveland W. Enius Sr., he says, P. Anthony White, writing in the Guardian Supplemental for August 5th, 1972, took brilliant note of the fact that the period for celebrations of emancipation as it affected the Bahamas had come. He made careful note of the fact that on August 1st of that year, which was supposed to be Emancipation Day, business went on as usual, and nothing happened in the Bahamas to awaken the citizens to this beautiful commonwealth that the birthday of one of its most momentous events had come. There was a time when August 1st was a holiday and was recognized as such because it was Emancipation Day. There is still a day in August that is declared a holiday, but it is known as August Monday and not as Emancipation Day. Only in the village of Sunderland, or better still, Fox Hill, is the occasion still kept in remembrance. It was on such an occasion that I was invited by Mr. Lionel Davis, who was then the president of the Fox Hill Welfare Association and the member of parliament for the district, to give the main address. It was held at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Lord and Lady Thurlow, Lord Thurlow was the governor at the time, were also in attendance. It was supposed to be a gala occasion, and the setup was so designed. Before the ceremony was started, it rained torrentially, but cleared up shortly afterwards, as it can only do in the tropics. I went on to make my speech, and a good time was had by all. We have gotten farther away from recognizing the event as being significant. We in the Bahamas, for the most part, don't seem to have a desire to keep alive that segment of our history when we were the legal property of the ancestors of some of the white Bahamians. Many of us forget that the slave even existed and seemingly like to believe that the Emancipation Proclamation, which set my ancestors free, was signed August 1st, 1833. To them, it was a momentous event, and for years, they did not allow us to forget it. They celebrated it happily. Even the people's government make no great to-do over it, and I believe that they should. When we fail to recognize it, we miss the whole point of the struggle that we call Bahamianization. Again, the words of the late, great Dr. Cleveland W. Enius Sr. from the book Let the Church Roll On. And now I want to bring in my special guest today, John Quad II. So even back then, in 1972, they had gotten to the point where they really just kind of, you know, weren't celebrating it, you know what I mean? Which is why I think this conversation is so important. I see the stuff that you're putting online, educating us, and that's why definitely we want you to share some of those same things you've been sharing. But Emancipation Day, what say you about this momentous occasion?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's amazing how those words were written, 54 years ago or so?
Yeah.
And they resonate so much today. And it's things that it would even make those of the, let's say, the less Afrocentric, to be kind, cringe. Mm. You understand?
Right.
It was one day, boy, it was one day that even caused me, you see, when I tell Bad raised my eyebrow, where he was like, you know, we black Bahamians were enslaved by. Mm. I ain't gonna focus on that too much today.
Yeah.
I get plenty heat online already. Yeah. I need no more. Yeah. Heat. Done hard enough.
Right.
But these are some of the harsh realities and tough pills to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And one, by my stance, that we should be quite unapologetic about. And furthermore, you know, we as Bahamians, and you know, I liked how we attached it to Bahamianization, right?
Yes.
You know, we're talking about geopolitical loyalty.
Yes.
So someone of any ethnicity.
Yes.
It's equally Bahamian across the board.
Right.
Because it literally has to do with your geopolitical
right.
loyalty.
Right.
And I would say this as well. You know, we celebrate the French Revolution. We celebrate, well, I don't, but many people
right.
celebrate mm-hmm. the American Revolution. We learned about it in schools and stuff like that. To quote,
you got fireworks going around, right. around the island, yeah.
To quote the leader of the African People's Socialist Party, he said, the pinnacle of, paraphrasing him, of course, but the pinnacle of human existence is when humans are fighting for their freedom.
Mm.
And I think it's a human part of us that does that.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that to say this, you know, white Bahamians and the Conky Joseph,
mm-hmm.
who in actuality, in a global context, are white
mm-hmm.
in the Bahamas, but not white nowhere else,
yeah.
you understand? Even if you find yourself on the proverbial wrong side of history,
mm-hmm.
that quote from Amalia Shetela, the pinnacle of human existence is them fighting for liberation,
mm-hmm.
fighting for their freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And we can appreciate how that manifests throughout history.
Yeah.
Even if we find that we might be on the wrong side of history, you could talk about something like, not feminism, but Minstan, you know, it was a time when Christians was burning, particularly Irish women and stuff like that, who were Gaelic and Druid, at the stake, calling them witches and all of these different
mm-hmm.
things. And that was perpetuated by men.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you as a man, Anku,
yes.
you could acknowledge that.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
And probably think back in your own life, maybe when you was young, you might have said this or
yeah.
do that. And at the end of the day, it's something you appreciate
mm-hmm.
and that you also celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, this is my second time on Guardian today, so I feel a little special, you know. But there was a text that last night, show, and it's like, oh, this fella seems to be anti-white. And I found that quite perplexing, because I did actually say some good things about people like Governor James Carmichael Smith,
mm-hmm.
though I did not give him all the kudos. I gave a balanced perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But when we celebrate emancipation, and there's always been this energy where, not just in the Bahamas, but globally, you know, African people are not supposed to celebrate their liberation.
Mm-hmm.
And much of this is because, you know, these institutions still exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So even if we talk about the Roman Empire and what they did mm-hmm. to Kemet and Kush and all of this
yes.
stuff, you know, Rome is still there, but it's now Italy and the Roman Empire kind of don't
mm-hmm.
exist no more. Even
mm-hmm.
when we talk about World War II,
mm-hmm.
yes, Nazis are still around, but the Nazi Party of Germany
yeah.
don't exist no more,
yeah.
you know? And even when we talk about things like LGBTQ rights and all of these things, these are easier pills to swallow, particularly in the current climate that we are now.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about what France, the states have done, these institutions still exist, and some could argue are now stronger than ever.
Yeah.
And this would cause us this tough pill to swallow.
Mm.
Right?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, indeed. Our other special guest in studio, I'm glad he made it, because I know he has a busy day today, a busy man. That's why I'm bringing him on, because I know school soon will start,
yeah.
and he can be even more busy. But I want to give it up for our dear brother Ian Mora. I forget.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Thanks, Bob.
I appreciate you being here. I saw also where you were sharing some things on emancipation and what it means to you, and I wanted you to share some of that today as we, you know, this conversation is going to go in many different directions, but I kind of want to start the show based on what I saw you guys posting online. But you had a very powerful post that touched me. I don't know if you did more than one, but I saw one. But I want you to share what you had put online regarding what Emancipation Day meant to you.
Okay. Is that the one with the AI pick?
It was, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's what I wanted.
A lot of these things like emancipation, independence, people often see them as almost like a gift that, you know, you just dust off the gift. But these things, in order for them to keep value, they are value in and of themselves. But as time goes on, in order for them to keep value, like, they have to be tied to something. They got to be tied towards some work. They got to be tied towards some effort. And so emancipation, even independence, are not things that it's just the past that we look at. It's like what we make in them every day. What our ancestors went through. It's more than what we experience today, regardless of, you know, whatever the situation we might be going through. What they went through was more. And we have a responsibility in honoring them, not just remembering them, but honoring them every single day and every single action. And that's what keeps emancipation purposeful.
Yes.
You know, it's not just this shiny thing. That's what makes it relevant, keeps it relevant to generation after generation, understanding that it's a work in progress, you know, and it's something that has to be maintained.
yes.
One of the things that comes up in this time now, especially they feel like there's a regression of some of the progress that they made, you know. And so these things are real, that things can go if you are not building on them, you know. And we have more responsibility in that, you know, than I think we've been acting on in the past.
Yeah. Again, in my grandfather's book, Let the Church Roll On, he continued to say, we have jostled our way into political power. The fight is now on for economic power. Without emancipation, the fight would not have been possible. It was a good fight. It is a vital fight. It is a glorious fight. We will come to celebrate emancipation more and more in the future because it gave us the great chance of our lives, the chance to fight.
Yeah. And you know, to piggyback off what my good brother Ian was saying, you know, these things are sort of even looked at as like isolated events.
Yeah.
And I think I can call him Groom Biden. Grandpa really expressed the sentiment was kind of already in my head. You know, this is a long process.
Yeah.
You know, as I always reiterate, and I'm working on a major project right now. I may not call it this, but for lack of use of a better word, you know, the Martyrs of African Liberation in the Bahamas. And this began in 1734 with Kwamino, based on my emancipation posts.
Yes.
And it ran all the way up to 1942. And those are the ones that are documented that we know about in the Burma Road uprising.
Yes.
Right? So these things are not singular events, you know.
Yeah.
And we have to appreciate that there was a struggle. As Ian said, you know, And it's funny how he even saying this thing about the United States now. And you saw something, I always like to reference the book, The Land of the Pink Pearl. So we're talking about the 1880s, 50 years after emancipation, right? And you won't believe there were people all around there, according to Justice Powell at the time, he was saying a lot of black Bahamians were saying they're ready to go back to slavery.
Wow.
Because, you know, at that time we were having things like famines and stuff like that. People don't know about these things during the colonial era. And famine, like weather or war.
Mm-hmm.
But famine is simply the inability to produce enough food to feed your population in any given space.
Yeah.
Right? And it's almost like this 50-year cycle. And we always kind of look back with this sort of nostalgia.
Mm.
And then we forget certain aspects, right? So in 1880s, you had black men be like, man, I need to bring slavery back, man. At least we had food. you know what I mean? And then 50 years after that, they talking about, man, we need to go back to when it was only them running things. And then you could fast forward even to today.
Mm-hmm.
And you have crazy, crazy, crazy statements about people talking about, not a lot of people, but they are loud, you know, talking about we was good better off days. In the, right, the good old days, the colonial period, right?
Yes.
And that oppression is almost what forced us to be our African selves and of unity. And it was a survival thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have done well, though I also reiterate that, yes, we have economics. We one of the wealthiest independent black nations on earth. And that's arguable too in certain ways, yada. But at the end of the day, you know, we always sort of lose sight of the struggle of our ancestors, you know. And so we have to realize that these are not singular events. This is a process, right?
Yeah.
Of events and things. Mm-hmm. And of course, emancipation, it was also a farce in one way, right?
Mm.
22 billion dollars was raised by Queen Victoria and others. Nathan Rothschilds, you know, you always had these conspiracies about the Rothschilds family and thing, but this is a real historical thing where she went to Nathan Rothschilds and they raised that money. And of course, the British taxpayer didn't finish paying that bill off until 2015.
Wow.
Right? Which is crazy, right? Mm-hmm. When we really think about it, and people try to separate, that was so long ago. But then they use scriptures from 2,000 years, or allegedly, we know.
Right, right.
But let's say the 1500 King James Version.
Right,
right. But they're using them scriptures from, 500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's doctrine,
yeah.
You know? But we can't consider a history that was less than 200 years ago.
Mm.
And also, it will be, I think, by my calculation, if I remember correct, I think the year 2032. But as it stands right now, even in the Bahamas, we have actually been, as Africans in the Bahamas, enslaved as chattel for longer than we have been not chattel in the entire history of this country. Mm. So if you're talking from 1648... Mm-hmm. To 1838, that's 190 years.
Right.
Right? And so, actually, in 2028, we'll then break even. It'll be 190. You get what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
So, all of these things we have to consider and not look at these things as singular events, but as a process. And though we might, a lot of it was a farce, it was a big payday for enslavers and all of that. But, you know, even if you want to call it a celebration, it should be called a commemoration. Mm. And that is where we focus on those that have died in the struggle for freedom, those that have pushed it forward. And not just the political sense. That's another problem. They only focus on the part. And even when they talk about things like the Burma Road Uprising, and
yes,
they focus on people like Randall Fowkes and these politicians. But they don't talk about Sweet Potato Taylor. One of the leaders, the man who got all beat up in lockup and thing like that.
Wow.
And Leonard Storr, who was the leader. Or the five people that lost their lives in the Burma Road Uprising, due in large part to encouragement by people like Stafford Sands, who encouraged the British officials to shoot us in the street. Because just shooting over their head ain't waking. And as you saw a video that's circulating now, too, that's actually what I was talking about, you know. And imagine how mad you got to be.
Yes.
Because Burma Road was Blake Road.
Yes, yes.
So imagine how mad you got
to
be.
To walk from
Blake Road.
To downtown.
To downtown. And then when you reach downtown, you unrest. You just start burning up the place, you know. 1958, they talk about the general strike, but they don't talk about the bombing of the Royal Victoria Hotel.
Wow.
You understand? And so we
Africans. Which was on, that was on Shirley Street there.
Right where the old magistrates from Parliament in Rawson Square.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. On the Shirley Street side.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these things, I hope I ain't taking too long.
No mind.
But you know, all of these things we have to really consider. And then there's certain names, you know, role, DeVoe. You know, these names that are attached to revolts. If he is a DeVoe from Southern Kent Island, you know, and they are taught to praise Andrew DeVoe. a loyalist who had, in his peak, was the third largest enslaver in the Bahamas, right? Wow. But not talk about Dick DeVoe, the revolutionary who was the driver on the plantation, who switched and led a revolt and ended up losing his life for it.
Wow, isn't it? I want you to talk more about the Burma Road as well as Kwamino. Let's get to this call here on Guardian Radio Today. Call you live.
What's happening, boss?
Hey, how you doing, man? Thanks for calling.
Boy, Chris. Ah, Lord. Oh, Chris, it's actually 182 years. It was like, you know, and
let me get my calculator. I was trying to do the math with my head, you see.
Annuity, right?
Yeah.
You know, established in 1833.
Well, I pinpoint mine at 1838 because I count the apprenticeship period. Mm-hmm. Some people say 1833, 34. I count it at 38 because that apprenticeship was a little bit about us ready. Right. Sorry, go ahead.
But see, you know, what folks don't get is that thing that preceded the abolition of slavery.
Right.
In the sense that the slave owners, they got their reparations first.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know.
Right, right.
And the 20 million,
billion.
20 million at that time, you know, was like 40% of the UK's income.
Right.
You know, so that was some big money.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And, and that was split up. I think it was like 46,000 slave owners.
Yeah. Thereabouts.
And that didn't end until 2015.
15, right.
Okay. Now, what amuses me in the present day, right, is that when we got our constitution,
right,
from the UK, I don't think we did not understand that all this stuff was playing in the background,
right?
You know, and the slave owners and the descendants were still receiving this money up until 2015.
Yep. Oh yeah, you know.
Now,
sorry, go ahead.
Now, it goes on to a bigger question: what we call the status quo in our country is actually a very large plantation.
Right.
Okay, and certain behaviors and certain people are still in place, you know, to the extent that a person can be elected and they can go into parliament broke and come out a millionaire.
Right.
We ain't building nothing. We ain't producing. We ain't feeding ourselves. So you know, that money must come from the public treasury.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find out that if I ever bring up a question that is aimed at the status quo on both sides of our political divide, it is shut down in some way.
By who?
Yeah, whoever.
By who?
By the status quo.
By a person who is a member of that status quo and whose lifestyle depends on a certain framework. On a certain framework being in place.
But isn't that kind of what has us stagnated at this point?
Yes.
The fact that we depend on the status quo, even though we may agree with this conversation, I still got to get paid. Right. I still got to feed my family.
Yep.
I can't be publicly agreeing with y'all.
See, and all the things that Chris is talking about in terms of how a certain group below, they all have the same problems, you know, feeding and hunger and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Persons above a particular line, they don't share those problems.
Mm-hmm.
Those issues are actually foreign to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I think, you know, that is our hurdle.
Mm.
You know, and I think, you know, and the stuff that Chris is doing, he is shedding light mm-hmm. on some very inconvenient truths.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Inconvenient, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your call. Thank you so much. 323-6232-3254-316-3254-259, the Family of Violence 242-300-5720. You were going to say something?
Yeah, you know, I'd be in total agreement with him. And the white oligarchy is still very much alive and well.
Mm-hmm.
And these things are complex, you know, because we're in a small community. You know, I's a fellow, you know, I'll put it out there. I've been to Queen's College all my life. Sometimes I used to be doing research. And I used to be like, mother sick, that's my boy, great-grandfather.
Yeah.
You know? So, but of course, we have to be careful in these things, you know.
It's a nuanced conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's a system with capitalism. You know, there is still a very strong Eurocentric Western civilization, imperial energy.
The status quo.
Exactly, you know. And the status quo is in tears. So I'll close on this and use it on a global, more global sense. You know, people talk about these things like Illuminati and the Matrix and all of that. And then they talk about like people like Jay-Z and Beyonce. Mm-hmm. And I just killed myself. I just be like, y'all really think that any Africans in that real combat, none of us in there, I promise you that now we get some stooges who doing that. And some of them, because it's so entrenched in our way of life and in our thinking and in our ideas, like people wouldn't even know. Someone will actually think they're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
You understand? I even had a conversation with someone the other day and they were talking about, oh, well, you know, the people in Lotra used to love Roland Simonet and he used to be so generous with them and yada. It's like, you know, I didn't even run on too much, you know, but it shows you we do have a lot of black politicians, you know, and they deserve black leaders, black politicians, black businessmen, you know, and they deserve a lot of the criticisms that go towards them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to remember, as he was alluding to, all this sort of come from the same place, indoctrinated. And deserve their criticism because they are doing harm in some ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I would argue that we must also keep our eyes and our ears. Because if we say that all, let's say, 100 or so MPs, cabinet ministers, and senators that are out there, if every single one of them are these evil, Kabbalistic, you know? That
and reflects, realistic, yeah.
Thank you, on us as a society.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'll name drop a politician who is very polarizing, been polarizing for the last maybe 15, 20 years, Fred Mitchell, you know. But out of everybody you see, who do the most emancipation celebration? Who stands firm on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's just because he is the MP
of Fox Hill,
because you get places like Yambi and Adelaide and
they could be celebrating too.
You know? And I'm not saying that Fred Mitchell is some savior.
I'm not saying that either way or other.
But we have to be careful in also being with that.
You can't paint with a broad brush.
Right. And then also, you know, they talk about, you know, African leaders that accept bribes and these corrupt leaders and all of it. Who bribing them?
Right.
You think the fellow who accepts the bribe is the fellow making the big money from this deal? No, he's the fellow.
That's why he won't accept it.
Right, exactly. Right. You understand? It's those, and white supremacy reigns in the Bahamas, you know, and any person with a basic understanding of history understands that.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that does not mean that every white Bahamian, every wealthy white Bahamian is some racist bigot.
Because white supremacy is a system.
Thank you. Right?
Yeah, and that could be run by black people too.
And if it is run by black people,
that's what's running it.
Right, you know?
Yeah. But brother, let me come. I want to say something before I go to the break. Brother Ian, I wanted to read what you wrote because it was so powerful. You said, early in life, I was influenced by Malcolm X, not just the story, but how his mind worked. Then I heard about Marcus Garvey and was equally impressed with how his mind worked. The ability to face opposition and respond with power instead of cower Walter Rodney, right? Sheikh Anta Diop, Naeem Akbar, Dr. Asa Hilliard, Patrice Lumumba, Chancellor Williams, Ivan Van Sertima, Haile Selassie, Kwame Nkrumah, Hartley Sanders, Napoleon McPhee, the All By Three, Quarantino, and the likes. So I don't expect to be agreed with any more than my heroes were. My objective is for my mind to work like theirs and stand just as firm. The world needs us more than ever. Emancipation is not just a day off. It's a day to measure how much are building on their sacrifices. I want to touch this when we come back here on Guardian Radio Today. Keep it locked, family.
And trauma in a me DNA we pass down. Chronic diseases, diabetes and gallstone. Cycle repeat, I know you treat me like a Ross clone. It's like a target on my back when me a walk round. I've got the bruises to prove.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
At Star General, you can go gold. Comprehensive car insurance covers loss or damage from accidents, fire, theft, and third-party liability. But the Gold Package gives you increased coverage for rental car and windscreen, personal accident, medical benefits, deductible waiver, and 24-hour roadside assistance where available. Our Star General Gold Package also gives you up to $2,500 for accidental damage to a rental car anywhere in the Bahamas. Star General, insurance made simple.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news anywhere, anytime, all day.
Budgeting and saving? Yes. Investing? Check. But what if you could do more? With an RF brokerage account, you can get priority access to local investment opportunities right as they come to the market. Never miss a bond or new share offering again. Investments in one place and benefit from expert investment advice. Contact us at brokerage@rfgroup.com to start doing more today. Some conditions apply. RF, money at work.
No budget for a vacation this summer? No worries. We got you. Guardian Radio 96.9 will fly you and a guest to South Florida for a vacation of a lifetime. Our sweet summer escape gets you round-trip tickets on Bahamas Air. $1,000 spending cash, thanks to Percy's Island Games. Brand new luggage from Brass and Leather. 4 days and three nights at the beautiful Holiday Inn Express Plantation. All you need is your passport. We got you covered. Enter now for the Guardian Radio 96.9 Sweet Summer Escape. Fill out the form in today's Nassau Guardian and follow us on all social media platforms. Remember, you must be 18 or older to enter. Entry deadline August 12th, drawing August 14th. Taxes not included and certain restrictions apply. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Now we're blushing, yeah. Skin peeling, cracking. Black Friday sale out. Not picnic is out. You made us heavy, yes. Whip chains and sorrow. Oh, how we cried out, yes. Till our eyes dried out. I've got the bruises.
Yes, indeed. We're back here on Guardian Radio Today. It is the 4th day of August. We're with you up until the 4 o'clock hour. And our special guest in studio today, Doctor. Yeah, I gotta say, you must even be a doctor. You, I prophesying into your life.
Put it on me.
Ian Mora and John Quad for the break. I just want to end with what you had put on Facebook. You said emancipation is not just a day off; it's a day to measure how much we are building on their sacrifices. Talk about that for me, please.
Well, when you attach that to the list of names that came before,
yeah,
those were all people who built And
the Walter Rodney, Sheikh Gandhi Diop.
These are all people that left a legacy that reinforces not only our emancipation, but our development on the whole. And that post was as much for me as it was for the public. And I'm constantly asking myself, are we doing what we should be doing? Notwithstanding the challenges that we face in real life, I kind of always go on to what our ancestors went through was more. And so instead of complaining about what is, how can I build? You know, if they tricked my mother, I reduced that vulnerability for my children, if not for myself.
Yes.
You know, how do we do that? How do we build institutions? And you know, I guess sometimes I get kind of hard on our generation. Because we are very heavy on the critical. But then I ask myself, like, what are we doing? You know, what are we
doing? We have to ask that question.
You know, what are we doing? And sometimes you want to think about, like, tangible. You know, what book am I writing? What door am I physically opening? When, you know, there's so many ways that we could contribute. We want to make our contribution this big and grand thing. But every grand thing is based on a lot of smaller things that set up that big thing to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for me, I don't know if it's me just making an excuse or whatever, but for me, having our children, you know, my children, the children that I teach, in a greater state of freedom. Same yardstick. This is why in our debate about Tuskegee, you know,
we
would have different positions.
It's a wonderful discussion going on.
Because I'm seeing it of them breaking away from status quo in their own way. And it could be scary at times, but just like with my children now who getting into like late teenage, that mean going out without me and all of that, like, You gotta trust what you put into them already.
Yeah.
You know,
train up a child.
This ain't the time now for me to be like freaking out and trying to control them. Yeah. What's the time now for
they done been with you all this time.
You know what I mean? And so now this is the test about whether my principles were good or not. And I honestly believe that the degree of fatherhood that I am seeing from our generation, there's going to be some results.
You know?
I feel so. I would brag. You know, we got three good fathers right
here. Of course. I personally don't have no deadbeat dads in my circle.
This is what I'm saying.
You know?
I think that's a myth that's often overblown, you know?
I think, like, if we go by the general narrative, you know, we can always be deficient. But you only depend on that narrative when you separate it from the reality. Like, we have the three of us sitting here, and we could look in each other's eye and know what we are doing for our children. Like, that's the reality. You know, that we live in. And to me, that is equally as important. You know? While we are to go into the past and make sure shore up our heritage, that is a gift that we are giving to the future. And when we do it right, then we'll have less slipper striking
and bonnets and
when we do it right. You know what I mean?
Because
now it's not connected to anything.
Mm.
Indigenous ways of dressing, they were connected to something.
Right.
The cloth had meaning, mm-hmm. right? And so now it's just about how I feel,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that has reduced us to I feel like slippers. You know what I mean?
All the time.
Yeah, I feel like slippers.
Yeah.
It's not that I am offending you,
mm-hmm.
but this represents.
I have no real reason to wear them out of shoes. I can wear slippers.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. You know, and when our heritage is walking bare feet, and then when we see the science behind walking bare feet,
mm-hmm.
are they really getting one step closer
mm-hmm.
to where we should be,
mm-hmm.
you know, even with regards to, this might get me into trouble, but even with regards to the skimpy dress, you know?
I mean, when I put
that alongside the Arawak,
mm-hmm.
who had on the loin cloth,
mm-hmm.
like, my value system have to, like, arc all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
As I'm looking at this person mm-hmm. who is wearing, you know, the skimpiness,
mm-hmm.
you know, is she now going back into her and forcing us mm-hmm. as masculine energy to normalize, not sexualizing that,
right?
Mm-hmm. As the Arawaks did, like, are we going through a reversal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like where you're going with it. Because we have been so entrenched in Dr. Amos Wilson always talks about the fact that our society is sick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We often point fingers, the children, mm-hmm. the this, the that. But the society is sick because you're making a good point. When the Arawaks, or even in our indigenous lands on the continent, when the women, even to this day, go topless, because they are not in an environment that is so seduced by pornography.
Yes.
Sexualized.
Mm-hmm. The issue is in them not wearing the shirt.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
The society is sick to the point where the music, the movies, everything is over-sexualized.
Yeah.
Now, you see what I'm saying? So,
and the excuse is sex sells, you know? It's just business.
If you're in marketing, right? You know that, yeah? We got to call here. Let me get them into the conversation. Call your life.
Hello.
Hey, Sparky, how you doing?
Hello, can you hear me? Oh, okay, sir. Thank you. Nice to hear you and your friend. Yeah,
your
guest.
Yes, sir.
I love the conversation. Hey, Doc, you know, this is my kind of thing, history and family.
Yes, sir.
I love our God.
Yes, sir.
Whoever our God is, whether it's the she or he.
Because mm-hmm.
King James didn't translate the Bible by himself. In 1604, he had 47 Oxford scholars and Cambridge mm-hmm. scholars help him to translate that.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out in 1611. So, you know, we go back.
Mm-hmm. So, Sparky, we talking Emancipation Day today.
I come into Emancipation.
I was making sure.
Yesterday was Emancipation.
Yeah, but we was it on yesterday.
Yeah, but you see what I'm trying to say, let me get out because you cut me. Let me get out. Because
you often call in and you take us down a tangent, so we ain't doing that today. So we just making sure.
No, I ended up with your family yesterday.
I know. She tell me.
Who tell you that, boy?
Why, my sister send me the picture.
But guess what happened?
I was with Sparky yesterday.
But guess what happened yesterday? Yesterday was St. James Lord's Day and St. James Church in Adelaide Day.
Yes, big celebration.
Because of the electrical shortage and everything, all the things that have been happening in the negativity, King St. James in Adelaide would normally, you can't even get to that corner on August Monday.
Yeah.
Man, you could go through there and been a plane through there on ground and only about 10 people was to St. James Church. The pastor wasn't even there.
Lord.
I guess the cost of gas and the cost of electricity and everything disappointed everybody staying home.
Wow.
But then I told my friend, I said, let's go to the beach.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of Bahamian families that had beaches on Adelaide and South Beach.
Right.
And the Inyuses, Port Adley, Malis, and a bunch of Isaacs and all of them had property down there by your family owned.
Yeah.
So I told my friend, I said, go down. She said, what be going on here? I said, I can show you.
Mm-hmm.
When we reached there, I see these bunch of cars. I say, this the Aeneas lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know I invited. And I know it's surprised. So I said, let's pass right here. When I pull up their dog, everybody say, oh, Lord, not Sparky. I say, now, wait, this the Aeneas lot? They say, yeah. And then we going down the line between Fritzy and Justin and Gully Agents, and then I get into Auntie this and mm-hmm. Auntie that. and Brother Carey, the retired policeman.
Yes,
and
sir.
Then that's your sister with the long
yes, hair. Yes, that's my sister, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's your sister on Fritzy side, eh?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, boy, look, and then she made sure me not take picture. And it was a beautiful day with the Angels family. Thanks for your family. I was hoping you would be there. So you ain't had no button to cut me. I would have been all over you. I would have roped you down there and you couldn't cut me.
I appreciate your call, Spock. I appreciate your call. And if I wasn't busy, because I actually had to work yesterday, I might have been on there. But that is something that we normally did on Emancipation Day. I lived in Adelaide at one point, so I remember the road being the church. That is a very popular church in this country. Matter of fact, the constituency is called St. James.
It is now.
Yeah.
I wanted to drop a question to you because Sparky, you got my brain going a little bit.
Yeah.
Even though he was a little off topic, but I still is like to get a lot. I still is get a lot from him.
Yeah, man.
Which James? Who is St. James?
That's a good question.
Because I hope it in King James from the same one that translated that Bible.
Yeah.
Is, yeah, you know, we got to look into that.
Yeah.
But, and that ties into our talk about emancipation. When we talk about Adelaide, mm-hmm. Adelaide, of course, was a displaced African, as the British call them, liberated African settlement. And it's, it appears by my research that it's sort of focused on Islamic Africans.
Mm.
And there's a an African king, or prince, I should say, who was a Wolof from the Diop people. His name was Abu Kelly.
Okay.
And he wrote these three letters to Governor James Carmichael Smith that gradually sort of got more intense.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, it was pretty much like, man, you know, I ain't supposed to be no slave. You know, I was a prince, a Wolof from the great clan of Diop.
Mm.
And Diop is, of course, still a very well-known Senegalese Wolof royal name. It's almost like Turi and Mali and, you know, and all of these other stuff. And it was sort of in that vein. And he's pretty much like, man, listen, I could help you run this colony. But you know the things I used to do in Africa?
Mm.
I's a big-time statesman, and y'all get me here. And every time I say I want to do the work, I am, quote-unquote, whipped by a cream-colored man.
Wow.
The second one was like, nah, listen, they tell me you was the friend of the black people, James Carmichael Smith. And I been here, and I done write you this letter, and you wouldn't respond. What's going on? May I remind you that I am this and of this.
Mm.
And he was just, you know, lining off his line and who his family was and, like, showing that, hey, I ain't supposed to be here working with these slaves. I suppose. And then the third one was like, man, you wouldn't know no fellow for no African people, man. You, that's only talk. And if you was for that, you would liberate me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So Adelaide and St. James, we got to find out who that St. James is.
Yeah, I'm doing some looking right now. Yeah. When we come back from the break, we should be able to give everybody an answer. Great. But we're going to run to the news right now and pay some bills. Again, we're talking Emancipation Day and the fact that it's not just a holiday. It is an opportunity for us to remember and to continue to fight because they didn't leave us in a situation where they said, okay, y'all take it now. Y'all go ahead and relax. It was more so of, hey, we took it this far. You got to take it further. And leave it. Keep it locked here on 96.9 Guardian Radio. Back after this.
Accuse me, say me fool. Beat me till my wail up screaming while you rail up. Peel your sugar cane. Free me, then you jail us. It's always the black that pay the penalties. Scars on my back, they bear the memories. Bodies found a grave with none of cemeteries. All we got are these verses and these melodies. And trauma in them in DNA we're passed up.
This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM.
I've got the bruises to prove. How could you pretend you never used and abused? Yeah, I answer scarred and refuse to treat me equally. Don't wanna hear your excuse. Yeah.
And we're back here on Guardian Radio today. Fresh news, smart talk all day on Guardian Radio. It's about 6 minutes after the 3 o'clock hour here on a Tuesday, the 4th of August. And we just commemorated Emancipation Day yesterday. So we're having a conversation with Brother Ian Mora and Brother John Kwa the second. And, you know, I got some text. Before I get to the text, we were having a conversation about St. James. So let me see if what I pulled up makes any sense. St. James churches are Christian places. So they're talking about in general,
okay,
right?
Okay.
St. James Church is a Christian place of worship named after figures named James in the New Testament. Most commonly, St. James the Great, they say he was an apostle.
Okay.
Or St. James the Just, who they say is the brother of Jesus.
Okay. Okay.
Local examples in the Bahamas include St. James Anglican Church in Adelaide and Nassau and St. James Methodist Church in Hopetown, Abaco.
Okay, interesting.
So that gives us a little bit insight, but anybody who's from St. James, if you want to call in to clarify that point, we'd be happy to hear you. We did have, let me just go through some texts. There ain't no white oligarchy. The oligarchy is agnostic to color. But yeah, there may be sex within it. But the ruling class are the oppressor. All of them is what the texts say. What say you?
I would agree to that to a certain degree. But I would also remember that there is a white oligarchy that don't mess with black people. Mm. And when you take the amount of wealth that they've hoarded, you know, when you look at industries like insurance, real estate, yes, there are blacks that own it, but they are dwarfed by the whites that have owned it, number one. And number two, and I stand by this statement, no African or black person has imposed servitude or other forms, but chattel slavery, which is what we're talking about in the context of emancipation, on any other black person in history. Mm-hmm. You understand? But this was something that was imposed on Africans by people of African descent onto people of European descent, right? And also, I also believe that there's this weird sort of thing, because we all have it, even me, as much as I live my daily life and try and things, we all have this sort of aura of self-hatred that's deep within us. I made a funny post the other day, and I put the picture of Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, when my neighbor generator got on and I ain't getting like, I'm jealous. You know what I mean? But we criticize black leaders, and I kind of mentioned it before, as we should. You know, we criticize black leaders, politicians, pastors, businessmen, and they are religiously dragged. And I think that is a part of our healthy, quote unquote, democracy that we do have here in the Bahamas, despite how people might feel. That's actually the reality. But you don't hear any of the white oligarchs being dragged, because in my view, it is just too normalized. It's supposed to be like that. But me and you come from the same place, and if you rise above me, it's a problem.
Yeah.
But the European has all think or believe. And so I agree with the text, and we should have vitriol towards those people that perpetuate white supremacy, many of whom are black today, not just in the Bahamas, but all over. But we also have to be careful that we are not too blinded by this vitriol towards black leaders to lose sight. To take it over to the African continent, again, something that's overplayed, but you hear about all these corrupt leaders that accept bribes. But the person accepting the bribe, you think that's the person that's starting to benefit the most from that scheme? Not at all, you know? So I do believe that this fear that has been implanted in us over the generations sort of makes us reluctant to acknowledge. But the text is certainly not wrong, you know?
What say you, brother Ian?
We can't escape the truth, you know, and nor can we escape the power of the world system that we are in. It's not about blaming anyone. It's not. That's just the reality of it, right? There are rich people, you know, and rich people see the world and experience it from people who are not rich. There's been, especially in the history of capitalism, there's always been a push for those who have to get a greater share of the resources, greater share of everything. And I think a part of what keeps them empowered is using their value system. So when we use their values, no, we get political freedom, okay, then we realize there's economic freedom. There's, as long as they are the yardstick, there's always going to be something, you know. We live in board house. They live in stone house. So we go in stone house. Then they go and they live in wood house. And, you know, if we go out to the national park, not Clifton, the other one. Clifford Park? No, the other one that's way out west.
Yeah, Clifton.
No, before Clifton.
National Park, boy, you got me there. Hold on.
Not the Goodman's
no,
thing.
No. Primeval Forest.
Oh, there you go. Right. Yes, okay. Primeval Forest.
Yes. When you go in the prime, see, y'all didn't forget that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right around the corner from
right
there.
Yes.
Then you go in Primeval Forest, right? They have a high-tech bathroom there. High-tech bathroom, right? And that's pretty much an outhouse.
Right.
You know? Mm. So when I heard about this high-tech bathroom, you know, and I experienced it, hey, hold on, this is an outhouse.
Mm.
But this is the same concept that we are now, like, on one part of town, we're looking at people who are using this and saying they are deficient.
Mm.
Then on the other side of town, people are using this.
And high tech now.
It's cutting edge, you know? And so when you don't have your own value system, and this is a part of where reparations has to go in, it can't just focus on the outside. Right. We have to look within ourselves and start to look at what our values are. And what are they based on? What are they based in order for us to really change the trajectory?
Right.
Because as long as you're operating on the same trajectory, then you will be behind. When they say you got to do this to be somebody, you got to just to enjoy the benefits that they benefit from, unless if you have your own value system, it's always going to feel like you're behind and you're catching
up. That's exactly it.
And so as developing ourselves, then we have to watch how we do it, watch where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
We have to build a Bahamian space or a African space in technology. Wherever it's going, with the AI, with the we can no longer just be sitting on the side, and our values based on what we need is going to be necessary. It would be good if we had some rich black people who were benevolent enough to come and see it. However, the first people who do anything, you ain't get the money to do it.
INS,
it's very rarely. You know, it's only afterwards people come in and commercialize.
Yeah, religion.
You see what I'm saying?
How do you make some money?
Money, right.
And we have to begin to create for that. A few years ago, I went in Cat Island, and I saw a house that had the ceiling made from conch shell.
Yeah,
wow.
I know just what you mean.
You know? To let the heat out, he had a little space for the air to flow out of. But this is like,
that's
I think the guy had even passed
the octagon shaped one.
It's shaped
like octagon. Yeah, I know just what you mean. You know? I think that new bike, if I remember correct, I'm sure.
Anyway.
Yeah. Go ahead,
It's down by on the way to Reverend King.
Yeah, new bike. Yeah.
But in any event,
I think so.
Like, he didn't do that for nobody.
No.
He do that to say he could do it.
Yes.
Right.
It was necessary.
You know what I mean?
This is what we have. This is what we're working with. And this is what we need.
This is what I could do. Yeah. You know? And he didn't just do it the regular way. He put the vents in, showing that he had an understanding for what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that might have been the last attempt that he had at it, and this is what we have to begin to do.
Yeah.
We have to begin not to create for others, for the rich,
for
the tourists. Mm-hmm. We have to begin to create for ourselves, and by doing that, it will increase our value so that when we go into the schools, when we go into the hospitals, it won't be about those who have the wealth get a different degree of service because we're operating on the value of doing for self now.
Mm-hmm.
So self now has value. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the missing components of this developmental path from emancipation to now.
Mm.
It doesn't acknowledge the value of self.
Mm.
It is based on, if I move in this community, then I am somebody. Mm. If I drive this car, then I am somebody. If I dress like this, then I am somebody. Yeah.
And it's all aligned with more so Eurocentric Western
that's what
ideas.
That's
right?
Rooted
I wanted to introduce this point here by Dr. Marimba Ani. Wrote a book.
Yorugu.
That's right, 1994, Yorugu, an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. Dr. Marimba Ani argues that non-European peoples must stop making Europeans the quote-unquote subject, the central focus, the standard or primary investigator of their realities. By this, she advocates for an African-centered worldview where African people are the subjects who define their own terms, concepts, and structures of existence. Speaking to what you just shared, my brother, the caller still there? All right, let's see if the caller, 323-6232-325-4316. 325-4259, the family violence, 242-300-5720. That's toll free. Call you live.
Hi, how are you?
Man, it's a nice, pleasant voice now. I hope you ain't coming to beat us up.
I was like, gee, they must be forgetting my name.
No, man, sorry about that. Sorry about that. If I know this voice was so nice, I'd say, y'all be quiet.
You know, I had the privilege to do some studies on this particular African nation. I guess maybe listening to you had kind of provoked me to do my little research.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
But for that, have you ever heard of this nation, Burkina Faso?
Yeah, man.
Burkina Faso.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm so amazed. Yes. I did a deep study on that country and just watching it on YouTube for like 3 days straight.
Yeah.
Right. Literally. And this is a young guy, just 36 now.
Mm-hmm. Ibrahim Traoré, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he is doing great things by he took his country back and is using all of the resources to rebuild the nation.
Yes. Yes.
And you do have persons in the nation who don't want it and is trying to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people just have a mindset of just wanting to be in slavery.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd mention that.
Appreciate it. Thank you
for giving me that desire to want to go deep and get to the root
to know more than you already knew. That's right.
A lot of times people are talking or hearing, but they're not doing their own studies to really understand. And the more you know, the more you understand, and you could free yourself, like you said, from that mental slavery.
Yes. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate the call.
You're welcome.
Burkina Faso, the meaning of Burkina Faso is the land of upright men. It was a French colony and it was a weird thing. The first leader was in so great, and it was still called Upper Volta.
Mm-hmm.
But it was when Thomas Sankara came in, one of the greatest leaders of the 20th century, African, European, Asian, or whatever. And this man was just absolutely incredible. Bahamians would love him. This is why I argue that Bahamians are socialists at heart. I may get in trouble for that one. Let me tell you one of the things he did. So imagine if, I can pick on you. Imagine if Anku, we start with an Afrocentric political party, Anku become the president.
Mm-hmm.
And he see all the MPs driving Benz and Beamer and all of these things. He say, you know what? No, man, we selling all them.
Because they're
all driving Toyota Corolla. If you want a nicer car, we'll put the plate on your own car.
Mm-hmm.
But the government, MPs, this is what Thomas Sankara did. You're all driving Corollas.
Mm.
And then he took that money from those sales and invested it in public transport.
Boom.
Now, I know Bahamians love that.
Yes.
That you're killing like 3-4 birds with one stone. You know?
Yes, because don't get me started on this so-called bus system we have around here.
You get the gink up the politician.
Yeah.
You get your public transportation. Well, and a part of that was this man convinced his nation to build a railroad across his country.
Wow.
They was, you know, and this Thomas Sankara, and this is one of the influences of course, the now great Ibrahim Traoré.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, if we are to believe, so let's say, you know, we sort of talk about this a little bit off air.
Yeah.
We have let's just do a round number. We have about 100 MPs, politicians, cabinet ministers, senators, who, where they come from? They come from the same communities as you and me and Kitt Island, Baintown. They come from these communities.
Mm-hmm.
So you mean to tell me that all of these people are a bunch of corrupt sycophants, not a system that we're in, sort of allows narcissists and greedy people to rise to the pinnacle.
Yeah.
You know, you could even compare it to like the police force. You know, we have issues of police brutality and all of that. You mean to tell me that every single person that has joined the force, every black Bahamian to be specific that has joined the force, only did it for power?
No.
So that they could hold a gun? I can assure you a good chunk of those people did it because they wanted to make a difference in their community and not just for a job, right? And now some of those might have been corrupted in a system that is already corrupted, you understand?
Yeah.
Even this, you know, one rotten apple in a barrel could spoil the whole bunch. I actually don't agree with that too much. It is true in certain incidences, but I think
you live it.
Right. But I think it's more nuanced to play beach soccer.
Yeah.
And I went to Switzerland. Play beach soccer with a team called the Sable Dancers in Basel.
Mm-hmm.
It was me and my good brother, Aaron Hanna, shout out to him.
Mm-hmm.
And one day we arrived late to practice. And it wasn't even that late, 4 minutes late, practice at 6.
We arrived only 2 black people.
No, it was one other black fella. So I couldn't put
the
restart.
Only 2 black guys, you're late.
And me and Aaron strolled in, sort of smile and hail everyone. Oh, and they took that as the greatest disrespect ever. And the coach chewed us out. I mean, I even cry a little bit because this is the suit in this space. Like 50 goalkeepers ready to come take your spot right now.
Wow.
And you late. And not just the whole team is mad at us. They ain't talking for the whole day.
They probably get punished for you.
All right, but now you see it too. Right, but we were the 2 bad apples in that situation, the bunch.
It was dealt with. If they'd allowed you to be late and smile and didn't say anything, then others would have said, "Oh, we could do that."
And didn't say anything. These fellas chew us right out. The captain, the coach, the team members, they didn't want to talk to us. They ain't give us no ride home. Yeah. How serious that was for them.
Now, it wasn't late no more.
We used to face the practice every day and the last to live.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phone lines.
Yeah, yeah.
Call you live. Go ahead, Kuala.
All right.
We can hear you.
Like what a lady said, but we came up for so man.
Yeah.
Let me just tell maybe there is a reason on that too. But I'm only showing you what could happen to a country when you use your resources.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the greedy leaders don't want you to have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And the same people who are trying to kill him, it's people who was helping them take the rein.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But now the outside forces getting to them, offering them all kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
Now they trying to take him out.
Yeah.
But the same thing could happen in this country. We just need to take our stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
But we got up the guts and the fortitude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See you guys. Have a good day.
Appreciate the call.
You know, we also have to understand, you know, we talked about certain things we can't talk about in the sensitivity. We stay there and say, boy, this might get me in trouble, you know. When you take certain steps as a black leader or African leader, just know you pretty much sacrifice in your life, your livelihood, the comforts of your family. You understand? And we have to remember that we are in perpetual survival mode. Agree with the call 110%. At the revolution, I'll be right there on the side saying, but at the end of the day, we sort of have to understand that, you know, when you take... And we have too many examples. What happened to Thomas Sankara, the founder of Burkina Faso, assassinated
in
1986?
Yeah,
I was actually in the Kempinski Hotel in Ghana while Ibrahim Traore was there. He had to have a whole floor by himself and all kind of bodyguards and militaries all around the place to protect him.
Yeah.
And while he was at that hotel, the whole hotel got shut down. Couldn't come out the room for like 6 hours. And we found out that there was an attempted coup while he was in Ghana.
Wow.
And this boy literally fly out, going to the helicopter tarmac. They had to land with helicopter, like in the stadium or something. And the fella just gone in the helicopter and gone to his country to save his country, you know. So they need support from us, as Ibrahim has. You know, we have Bahamians calling in about him.
Yes.
You know, all of us know and love him. He is like this beacon of shining light right now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how you know a good leader, because every time they tried to kill him, you know who was the one? It wasn't just the military. It was the youth and the students, right? And the people who was coming out and protesting, but you all leave our good president alone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, his situation is different. Now, we do talk about natural resources, about those nations in Africa.
Oh, they really. They,
thank you. Yeah. So Burkina Faso supplies uranium to France, things like that. So our natural resources is a pittance.
To what they are.
Right, you see? And it's a joke that I saw.
That's kind of our blessing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there's something called the resource curse. There's this idea that African nations with a lot of resources, it helps them.
Oh, yeah.
It actually doesn't.
Yeah.
It works the opposite, you know? And I use a joke, you know, we have this currency, the universal legal tender, which is this paper money.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if they made conch shells the universal legal tender.
Well, hey.
What you think can happen?
Yeah, they come in.
I promise you,
manifest destiny.
Invading,
manifest.
That fella on Cool, you on the radio door, man. All them behemoths is communists. They'll pull that one story of that man who did that horrible thing. That see, all them is man. We gotta go in there and we gotta.
There's break down statues.
Exactly. We gotta go in there. And we gotta, you know. So, not to be pessimistic, of course, but the situation is very dire, and it requires a lot of bravery. A lot of military might to take certain steps, in my view, you know. And this is why you would even see someone like President Mahama of Ghana, who you could see what he's dealing with. But in certain incidences, you know, he have to not necessarily pull back, but he have to be very strategic, very diplomatic in certain circles.
Yeah.
Especially with certain people in power in certain places. And while there's a rise of African consciousness overall, there's also a rise of white supremacy.
Yeah, nationalism.
Italy get a whole Mussolini supporter.
Wow.
That's the leader of their country right now, openly. And they vote for her because she support Mussolini.
Mm.
You know? So this is not something that's...
No, that's the day and time we're
right,
in. But,
you see?
And I'm glad you said that. I said, this text says, there's a quote-unquote benevolence in the UK's practice of serve to brainwash those who have been impacted by it, to the point that many of us have punctuated our brainwashing by speaking and living in a way that copies the oppressor.
Yep.
Some still wear suits and neckties in the middle of summer. My Lord.
Yeah. Listen, I applaud that text.
Yeah. This next text says...
And the lawyer wig.
Yes. Yes. It doesn't have to be, quote unquote, every single person. Fair is real.
Right.
I do not believe that every citizen in Germany in 1939 supported Hitler's policy. But nobody openly defied the policies because there was the G7, every organization, fair and self-preservation. The man with the power and control of the arm of the law can operate with impunity, even if thousands do not agree with him, until the straw breaks. What say you, Brother Ian? Fair. How much is fair a part of keeping us away from this idea of maintaining emancipation versus just saying, oh yeah, that happened? How much is fair a part of it?
I think fair is central to it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think because the trauma is very real, that would carry the fear within us, you know? And so, yeah, fear is a main determinant, you know? Sometimes I'd be like, I have to make certain decisions as a principal of a program, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, other people might not do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to say sometimes to people, well, I already in the place where they send you.
Right.
So, you know, I just can make the right decision.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, it even ain't about the oligarchs. It's about you having a choice, and you're letting what's inside your head, what's going on inside of you, cause you to make a bad decision.
Yeah.
You know, cause you to make a decision that entrenches the reality more.
Mm-hmm.
That the big bad wolf could only dominate if others of us are working along with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not... I hear Chris talk about people talking about leadership, but the truth of the matter is leadership is really a reflection of the people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But the people allow it.
Not just what they allow.
They come from us.
These are the same values.
Yeah.
And so you find that even when people are critical, when they get, that's part of the frustration that people are having now.
Mm-hmm.
I try you because you criticize them boys, but then when you get in,
you do
the same thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? And people are just kind of frustrated with that now.
Yeah.
And to me, the real thing is to bring healing.
Yeah.
You know, like we have to create a space where we hold people accountable without throwing them out.
Yeah. You know, throwing them away.
Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, like, restorative justice comes in, where we move away from the punitive nature of, the plantation value system that pervades everything, where if you're not doing the right thing, then you need to be punished. Yes. And if we don't punish you, we can get out of hand. Yeah. That, we got to switch from that.
Yeah,
because then it turns even the criminal, it turns him and his victim against each other, as opposed to creating a space where there can be restitution.
Yeah, right. Yes.
You know, if you expect me to be the bad guy, then I'm going to be that bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
But if the expectation is that bad thing. We need you to compensate for that so that we could move on fairly. That's pretty much the same thing that reparations is asking. Mm-hmm. Reparations is not just for the victims. It is also for the oppressor. You know, to be able to terms with the reality of your benefits, the reality of what actually happened, so that it doesn't happen to you even.
Certainly.
Right. You know? Because that is where a lot of their fear is. There's this fear that we are going to retaliate. And so even for them, still a motivating
But they know factor. What they would do if they were in our shoes.
If they were in our... And so there is where the fear is. And then we have the fear of them reacting to that fear that they have in, and so we got to preempt. This is where the respectability politics comes in. If I look a particular way, then I would be exempt from their fear. If I act a particular way, then I would be exempt from their fear. Their fear that turns into abuse of me. Their fear that turns into lack of opportunities. As opposed to, you know, I'm deserving. Of these things, you know? I am deserving of a good life. A lot of the young men that I work with, they don't feel like they deserve it.
Right.
They feel like how they are living, this is what they deserve. And a part of getting transformed or facilitating transformation is helping them to realize that they deserve more.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's go to the phone lines here on Guardian Radio today. Call your life. Caller going once.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead, my brother.
Good afternoon, Uncle, and good afternoon to Ian Tarian last week, I think it was.
Brother John Kwa is here as well. Brother John Kwa, the second, is here as well.
Hello.
Christopher Davis is here also. Just letting you
know. Good afternoon. Yes, and Christopher, I saw him, I think, recently during the Independence celebration.
Yes,
I told him as much opportunity as he get to come into your show or any other show to share some of our historical knowledge with us and help empower us in terms of identity. I told him continue to do that. But the reason I called in was I wanted to take the opportunity to thank Ian for the work that he's doing, very critical work, transformative work with our boys. I've long said that we have an identity crisis in our country with what our youth and general population is challenged with, not just our youth. But the work in our youth is being done by someone like Ian, who has the knowledge of who we are as a people and are able to help these young people understand that when they come to a program like Program Shore, and that these young people get it when they encounter him at Program Shore. I just want to say thank you. It's not something that they're going to get in the traditional school setting, but once they're there, Ian takes the time out to pour that knowledge into them for them to discover truly who they are as young men and as young kings, princes, whichever you want to call it, but to empower them to identity. And I think we need to hold more of these kinds of conversations. And again, Ian, hats off to you and the entire team down there, Program Shore, and the work that you guys are, the transformative work that you guys are doing. with our children, our young people, our young men in particular. Hats off to you guys. But I just want to say thank you and encourage more people to support and get on board with what you are doing down there. I heard you say program sure is not the stigma that it, that people have about it as this penitentiary-like school. No, that is a place, should people come and visit, they'll realize that these boys are truly being transformed. I want the entire Bahamas to know that the best cookies that you could find on this side of heaven are made at Program Store by our boys.
I like
boys.
The hospital bread.
I'm telling you, these cookies down at Program Store, they're similar to the hospital. Crazy, you know, Uncle. Mm. Because here we now, we can't even get bread from the hospital.
No.
That was one of the most famous things about the hospital that we didn't complain about, but now we can't even get bread from the hospital. But I want people to know that the work that Ian and the entire team down that Program Show is doing is producing great fruit and cookies
yes,
for our society. And we just want people to support what they're doing down there. And again, let them know that, you know, we see the work that he's doing and we thank him for his commitment to it.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, thank you so much, Carla.
Most of the nation feels the same. But,
yeah.
I just want to add, I was glad that he said me and the team, because there is a team, you know. There is the refocused team that people wouldn't really see. They would be the ones who are reaching out to parents now. There would be the school psychologists. Mm-hmm. They the people who like some real unsung heroes in the ministry. They dealing with a mammoth task.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, I just got a lot of respect for them. Then there are the teachers and staff members, the SRO Maki that works along with us, the signatures. Like everybody works together. And last year, I think we had the greatest degree of success, you know. I am fortunate to be the principal at this time where so many things are coming together that lead in towards the good things that the gentleman spoke about.
Wow.
So I just have to make sure and highlight like the team, you
know? Yes, powerful.
The Ministry of Education doing something right.
Yes.
And we must celebrate these institutions that are successful, you know. And I'm sure a part of it is, you know, you working towards the holiest of holiest sort of initiatives. You understand what I'm saying? And so, and once you have people that cut from the type of cloth that you are, I'm sure it's easy to stay motivated. And to stay focused, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a part of this emancipation process.
Well, that's exactly.
That's exactly.
Right. Yes. You know? That ties exactly right in. Right. That ties exactly right in. Let's get to the phone lines. Caller, you're live. Caller, going once. I hope we didn't lose you. All right, call by caller. This text says, good day. The oppressors don't want healing. Otherwise, they would pay reparations. America voted no against slavery being a crime against humanity. The oppressors responsible in a way for us not truly knowing who we really are. I see we got to go to a break. We'll respond to that text when we come back here on Guardian Radio today. Again, my name is Pastor Dr. Cleveland W. Enes III, also known as Kahun Anku Sarah. Special guest in the studio, Ian Mora and John Kwa II, also known as Christopher Davis. Keep it locked.
I don't wanna hear you rescue it, yeah. I've got the bruises to prove. How could you pretend you never used and abused, yeah? I hear you scorn and refuse to treat me equally. Don't wanna hear you rescue.
Like say you not use me like a tool, abuse me like a mule, refuse me now your school, then accuse me, say me fool, beat me till my wail of screaming while you rail up, peel your sugar cane, free me then you jealous.
No budget for a vacation this summer? No worries. We got you. Guardian Radio 96.9 will fly you and a guest to South Florida for a vacation of a lifetime. Our sweet summer escape gets you round-trip tickets on Bahamas Air. $1,000 spending cash, thanks to Percy's Island Games, grass and leather, 4 days and three nights at the beautiful Holiday Inn Express Plantation. Free car rental from Hertz, too. All you need is your passport. We got you covered. Enter now for the Guardian Radio 96.9 Sweet Summer Escape. fill out the form in today's Nassau Guardian and follow us on all social media platforms. Remember, you must be 18 or older to enter. Entry deadline August 12th, drawing August 14th. Taxes not included and certain restrictions apply.
Hungry for some serious beef? Then get ready, because Burger King Nassau is bringing back the double quarter pound king. That's a full half pound of flame grilled beef topped with melty cheese, tangy mustard, crunchy pickle, and fresh onions. Served on a toasted sesame seed bun. Classic style. Big flavor. Big protein. Big satisfaction. Get your double quarter pound king meal with medium fries and a drink for only $10.35. More food, less money. Only at Burger King Nassau.
Wendy's is spicing things up this summer with the new jalapeno ranch cheeseburger. A hot, juicy beef patty topped with spicy jalapenos, creamy ranch sauce, melted cheese, and fresh toppings for the perfect balance of cool and spicy. Every bite brings bold flavor that keeps you coming back for more. Turn up the flavor with the burger at Wendy's today. Available for a limited time only.
At Cleveland Clinic, you set your course, not cancer. So when your journey takes an unexpected turn, you seek out the experts who've conquered it before, and you forge new paths to help fight cancers. For every route to a cure, for every care in the world, see how we're innovating cancer care at Cleveland Clinic today.
Headed to South Florida soon? Holiday Inn Express in Plantation welcomes you to the heartbeat of Florida fun. Whether it's business or pleasure, the Holiday Inn Express is close to sensational shopping, captivating dining, and nightlife. Elevate your Florida experience. Sleep well and rest easy at Holiday Inn Express. Complimentary breakfast buffet featuring seasonal favorites. Keep up your fitness routine in our 24-hour on-site fitness center with cardio equipment and free weights, or take a refreshing swim in our outdoor pool. Your special Bahamas tourist rate awaits. Holiday Inn Express, 1701 North University Drive in Plantation. Book your getaway now. Call directly at 954-472-5600 or the system.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The bruise is to prove. How could you pretend you never used and abused? Yeah, I answer scarred and refuse to treat me equally. Don't wanna hear your excuse. Yeah, now we're blushing. Yeah, skin peeling, cracking. Black Friday, say that.
And we're back here on Guardian Radio today, just about 15 minutes left in the show. Special guest today, Ian Morrow, as well as Christopher Davis, also known as John Kwa II. My name is Kahun Anku Sarah. You're talking emancipation today, and one of the things I really wanted us to talk about was Quarantino. Okay, we mentioned it earlier in the show.
Quamino.
Well,
you weren't necessarily incorrect, mm-hmm. because, and I heard Ian, I think you referenced him as Quarino, right? Mm-hmm. So that is how he's referenced in Islanders in the Stream.
Okay.
Michael Creighton's, right. And unfortunately, African revolutionary, 1.5 paragraphs on him. You mm-hmm. understand what I'm saying? But his real name was actually Quamino.
Okay.
Or we could say, the O at the end is probably an anglicized version, and it's in the masculine thing. Mm. But the actual name is Quamino, and that's how you would say it, Quamino.
Quamino,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, right. And Kwame is sort of derived from that. Different cultures say it's born on Friday, born on Saturday, but that's the day name, right?
Yes, Anku is born on Wednesday. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Mm. And so, the interesting thing about that too, you know, we have had this narrative of separating ourselves from the diaspora. Mm-hmm. And the story of Quamino refutes that fully, you mm-hmm. know, because there's this pantheon of Akan revolutionary heroes throughout the Americas, right? Mm-hmm. Including the United States, as a matter of fact, though they have been swept under the proverbial rug. Mm-hmm. When you look at Queen Nanny, which is translated as the Queen of Queens, actually, you know, Captain Cujo, General Quao, that's mm. Jamaica, Kofi in Guyana. It's literally all seven of these days.
Mm. Wow.
Represented all throughout in numerous ways.
Right.
And so this place is the Bahamas. Quamino is the Bahamas' representation of this proverbial Akan revolutionary hero that you see a lot. British colonies where they brought these enslaved people. Mm-hmm. And Kwamina would have either arrived on the Bahama Galley, which arrived in 1721. That is the one that physically brought the warriors of John Guao, John Canoe, to the Bahamas in 1721, the summer. And then in 1730, that ship was owned by Governor Woodes Rogers, by the way, key point there.
Wow.
And in that old crazy book that we about to throw in the garbage, The Making of the Bahamas, they claim that the Fanny family is the one that started the straw industry in the Bahamas.
Wow.
They owned the slave ship that bring the Africans that started the straw. You get it?
Wow.
He could have also arrived on the Nassau, 1730. This was owned by the Rogers family.
Wow.
Specifically, Woodes Rogers' son, William, right, who remained in the Bahamas afterwards, had his plantations. This is where a lot of the black Rogerses in the Bahamas come from today. Both those ships came from southwest Ghana, you know, and so he would have arrived on one of those, driving of being run away for some time since he arrived in the Bahamas. But we can make an educated guess, seeing that John Canoe is so prevalent. You know, we have the special link with a hunter, but also in, maybe in Zima, Wassa, some of the other groups, but it seems to have been centered around a hunter, of course, a hunter warrior.
Right.
And he certainly was a warrior. So we're talking about a time when there were less than 1,000 people living in the entire country. Mm. And this fellow refused to accept enslavement. And he was sort of living in the interior of the island. Then he would come down at night to supplement himself in any way. This interior of the island was in Proton, you know, the song, Blue Hill Water Dry.
Yes.
So this is where a lot of our freshwater reserves were. We have to do some archaeology around there because I'm sure we could find a well or something, man. But I just hope that too much development hasn't overridden any potential archaeology that would be found there. But essentially, though, Kwamina made a plan. Now, he was not satisfied, as these other revolutionary heroes, with his own freedom. He had already gotten it, you know. But he actually made a valiant attempt to free all Africans in the Bahamas. Crucially, from the British side, these results when, revolts were not singular incidents. This represented all of their colonies.
Right.
This was in the peak of the reign of Queen Nanny in Jamaica. This was only 2 weeks after Queen Brefu, who had taken the island of St. John in the Virgin Islands, pushed all of the Danish and British colonists out and held the island for over a year. And before she was able to be captured, she essentially killed herself, which is actually a part of the Asafohene culture that you see coming. Sometimes you will see me wear the one with the green one. One is poison for me. If I get captured and I just fall asleep, never wake up. One is poison for you. If you was the enemy, so assuming you're the enemy. And the other one deals with sort of protection, right?
Yes.
So this is the culture, this continuance of Asafo culture, which is also linked to John Canoe, but we ain't gonna get into that today. Now, on September 1st of 1734, this revolt was supposed to happen. And in the midst of him recruiting people, he was captured and arrested. During his arrest, he actually killed one of the British officials with a dagger. So you know what they do to him.
Wow.
We ain't even got to discuss that. Yeah. Right? They tortured him. And this is where the plot was revealed. There was a yellow fever outbreak as well. And he was supposed to attack what would have been Fort Nassau at the time. And the other bastion on the other side. This was even before Fort Montague and all of these places were there. And you notice that I did the picture of that post confused one or two people because it was Government House. Now, the plan was to begin this revolt by killing the governor first.
Okay.
And then when the ensuing panic to then, you know, so this was a strategic military plan. That governor was Richard Fitzwilliam. What's the name of the hill?
Right.
Him and some other officials, but y'all got to save us, man. This fella, this African fella, they almost had a whole revolt. You got to find a safe place for the governor. And, to the, and the original structure that's there now was actually rebuilt around 1803. But that hill was chosen as the place for the governor because of an African revolutionary who was ready to do him in and start this revolution and, quote-unquote, make New Providence an African colony.
Where would the governor have been living before then?
I don't know, you know. He probably had his own residence somewhere. You had the main city of Nassau, so he probably lived somewhere right on, like, George Street. Could have been where Cumberland Lane is now, where you see Grey Cliff and the Heritage Museum is now. Probably somewhere in that area, because that's, like, old Nassau.
Right.
Right? So somewhere in there, and I'm assuming closer to the water. But eventually, of course, the governor, and then I believe the first Government House was completed somewhere in the late 1730s, or was it 1741? it escapes me, right? Mm-hmm. But that sort of coincided also with the building of Fort Montague. But they only associate the building of these military bastions and these places with revolution.
Right,
you understand?
They say he was passive.
Yeah, and I argue that the main reason for the establishment, or it probably would have happened regardless, mm-hmm. as the colony grew, became more profitable, but that certainly galvanized the building mm-hmm. and the selection of that spot on top of the hill. Where you kind of see all around, you mm-hmm. know, to this day. So Kwamino is our Akan revolutionary hero, the first revolutionary hero in the Bahamas. And I say the first because there actually were others. And in 1797, the Bahamas almost became the first Bach Republic. But I can leave that right there. And I'm a tangent because that involves some of our brothers from the South.
Yeah, yeah. But this text, I guess we'll leave on this note. Mm-hmm. This text says, there were Black Africans, Arabs, and Jews involved in the transatlantic slave trade. So why is the white European the sole focus in terms of reparations?
Oh, that's incredibly easy to answer because they made all of the money. They're the ones that implemented it. The transatlantic slave trade was a result of the genocide of indigenous Americans, Friar Bartholomew Las Casas, who has the insulting nickname as the quote-unquote savior of the Indians, and who is canonized in many churches, especially the Catholic one, as a matter of fact. He said, let's go and get the Africans to make up for the labor shortfall. Mm. And as a matter of fact, enslaved Africans, Columbus's cabin boy was an enslaved African as well. And the transatlantic slave trade, the slave trade to Europe had already existed. And then remember, the Moors were there and were not fully expelled until 1491. Mm-hmm. And many of those Africans who were left behind there. And then the Arab slave trade began long before. Africans were in a state of survival. The biggest lie ever told in history is that Africans deserve even 1% of blame for that. I had a big argument about this in Winneba, in Ghana, mm-hmm. with about 9 older scholars, and they was chastising me, and I hold firm, you know, mm-hmm. I get uncle. And a man by the name of Kojo Yanka was there, mm-hmm. and that's what led to me being put on the World Pan-African Heritage Museum Board. Mm. And he saw my perspective. Yeah. And so, and then again, it's a complex issue. We could do a whole show on that.
Yeah, we have to.
One day.
We have to.
Just know that that is the
Yeah, because you have people who mm-hmm. who have already been affected by a religion that mm-hmm. that told them that they were lesser than if they remain indigenous.
Right.
So this level of self-hate now mm-hmm. is now a part of your programming
exactly.
to say, well, if you're not a Muslim, then you are less than, we can sell you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
And the Catholics passed a papal bull called Dum Diversus in mm-hmm. June of 1452 that literally meant until different. And it gave Catholics the right to enslave African Muslims as well. You understand mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And it kind of goes with this. Because I talk about this in the first 2 chapters of my book, the victim-blaming narrative that you see in African genocides, where Africans are the only people blamed in their own genocide. Mm-hmm. Now, we can analyze it and acknowledge what happened, but I can assure you it was survival mode. I'm actually doing a chapter in a book for Taylor and Francis right now where I used the Ahanta story as a microcosm. So as I close, with Princeton, where John Kwao was king, there was these myths that John Canoe was the one that built the European fort for the slave traders. And I said, I can tell you all now all that is foolishness. Mm. And what had actually happened, Princeton was burned to the ground 3 times.
Wow.
And in the last one, only 11 people survived in what was pretty much an African city.
Mm.
And then they was like, wait, the Dutch do this to us, then it was the British, then it was the Portuguese. Who else ran? We get the Danish and the Prussians. Well, at least the Prussians, when they crown their king, they follow our tradition and they seem to be a little nicer, so less live in the Prussians. They went to the Prussians and begged them, listen, y'all got to build a fort because these people just coming and killing us.
Wow.
You know, and so people who understand that Africans were, in fact, in survival mode. And this is something I think me and you got, not an account against each other, but it was sort of teaching someone else where they used it manifested in these terms like black on black crime.
Yeah.
And you only need to watch a movie will teach you better. what's the one with the five boroughs in New York? Yep. Or Leonardo, gangs of New York. Mm-hmm. There you go. And that's where you see the Italian and the Polish and the Irish under the same conditions that Africans continue to live in the West today. And where do you see the same result?
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. Gangs being formed. And they don't call it white-on-white crime. And no. Sicilian mafia.
They never
fight
do.
The Catalonian mafia.
Right.
That,
you know?
That's right. Like the softer version of racism.
Right.
That because it ain't about killing people, mm-hmm. people pay less attention. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very important because the African speaking for Africa must be perfect.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it must be perfect because even with the Jews during the Holocaust, mm-hmm. Jews who participated
yes.
in that because it was a survival mechanism.
They were in Hitler's army.
Very much.
But no, nobody asked them to explain that.
Right.
You
yeah.
know what I'm
or
saying?
Or even blame them.
No.
Exactly.
Like they do with us.
Exactly. Yeah. So where does this right. And it's these softer, more subtle aspects of racism mm-hmm. that we have to go through, that we even put onto ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Great discussion today. Sorry, our time is out. And I want to thank a special guest, Ian Mora. I really appreciate you being here. He is the principal for Program Shore, amongst other things. And I know school is almost back in. This is the month of preparation.
Oh, yeah.
So I wish you all the best for this upcoming year, my brother.
Thank you very much.
And try to get you on maybe one more
time. Yeah, yeah, for sure. This was great, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me on.
Yes.
As well, my brother.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Christopher Davis, also known as John Quad II. We pray that everybody got something out of it. One text to say, you mind your guest is talking about you, Chris. He's talking so fast. Anyway,
sorry,
we will have it is recorded, so you'll be able to.
I'll work on that.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, the passion
yeah.
I speak so excited. Yeah. You see, I break and sweat
yeah,
in the studio.
Yeah.
You know?
The Talking Heads are up next. Naughty and MJ come your way, so make sure you keep it locked here on 96.9 Guardian Radio. Fresh news, smart talk. All day. Again, my name is Pastor Dr. Cleveland W. Enius III, also known as Kahun and Kusara, the Mastu family.
It's always the black that bear the penalties. Scars on my back, they bear the memories. Bodies found a grave with none of cemeteries. All we got are these verses and these melodies. And trauma in them in DNA were passed down. Chronic diseases, diabetes and gallstone. Cycle repeat, I know you treat me like a rascal clown. It's like a target on my back when me a walk.